Talking Tesla.
Talking Tesla.
Tesla. I'm not sure if like my foot should be on the brake or the accelerator.
Because they put reins on Elon.
It must be some sort of geometrical algorithm.
I don't even need to touch the steering wheel there, Tom.
Oh, I'm sure there's some math. So SpaceX, here's the deal. Landing a rocket on a drone ship is key.
Charger.
How am I expected to drive a car without autopilot? Safely.
Charger. No, I'm not a good parker, Tom.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit it. I just think that this is a car company that is run by super geeks. All the other cars are going to be stupid cars compared to this car.
You don't even have to remember that. You've got a Model X. I have seen the future, and it is light pole charging.
No, I wouldn't call it a screw-up. Do you like your Model X?
God, it's beautiful. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls,
did you miss me?
Did anybody miss me? Did you miss that?
Nobody. And I can tell you this, nobody missed that.
Hey, is this 93?
We, of course, missed you.
93. I'm back.
We haven't seen you.
This show doesn't look a day over 87.
all 90s, we have not seen you. Do you realize that? You haven't been here for the 90s.
I haven't been to the 90s. I missed the 90s. Actually, that's kind of true.
Yeah.
Due to some substance issues, I missed a lot of the 90s.
That's not even close to being accurate.
Really?
What substance are we talking about?
I've known you for a very long time, and I think at the most, you probably took a couple of acetaminophen in the 90s.
Yeah, there was an ibuprofen.
But although if you take acetaminophen with four bottles of Chardonnay, it might have some negative impacts on your liver.
I remember you in the 90s.
We were in training
slogging
in the 90s.
In the olive view that was old.
Oh, wait. Are we going down memory lane now?
Let's not go there.
Let's not.
In our Teslas?
You know, I was just scanning the Tesla site, and damn, Tom, you are so correct.
I am correct.
If you look for a 75.
Can't do it.
It's like stripped.
Well, you can get a 75,
it's a stripper 75.
My job is to sort of orient people because when I was away, there was so much good that was about the show.
I
thought you guys did such a great job. But there is some orientation which is required. So first of all, Tom was talking about a revelation that he had, which is blowing us away before we get to the pre-show, before we get to the show. He said that air suspension is now not something you can just add on to any car.
It's not an option at all in any car. It either comes on your car automatically or you can't have it.
Now,
and I know a lot of people, this is what's going to happen now.
Here we go.
All these people out there are going to start being like, you guys are idiots. You don't pay attention. You're not watching every half second for updates to the website. Yes, I'm realizing it's been on here for a couple of weeks and I haven't discussed it with these gentlemen, but it's out there.
So you have to buy a package that has air suspension. You can't just build your own and then say, drop in air suspension, please, sir.
So buy a Model S, pick the 75D option.
Or D, without the D.
Or without the D
75,
option.
75, yeah.
No smart air suspension.
What do I got to click on to get some air suspension?
100.
100, yeah.
You have to buy a 100 to get air suspension.
No. Take a step back, young gentleman. I may have been away, but 75 Teslas do not have an option for air suspension, no matter what.
That is correct.
What the hell has been going on since I was away?
I don't really understand why.
They're trying to differentiate the 75 from the 100, from the 3, from the X. This is upsetting.
And I think it comes down to they don't want necessarily to have all these different types of automobiles coming off their line, right? So now it's like, you get a 75, there is no air suspension. Like if you're putting a 75 pack, that's it. 75 pack. They can build the whole sled and suspension together. Boom, 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 boom. No issues. And it's not an option. It's kind of a bummer.
It is a huge bummer because I would say that air suspension is such an important part of the drive, the car, for so many people who have driveway issues, who have other issues. So that is really, that's not just a minor tweak to the website. I consider that a big deal. But maybe a lot of people don't because they don't care about air suspension. But having had air suspension and having not had air suspension, you can't go back.
My guess is that just not enough people either were paying for it because they didn't understand what it did for them or that it just wasn't necessary for them.
All right, well, that's the pre-show before the show. Thanks for that depressing pre-show. I was going to start the show with, hey, guys, I really missed you. I thought you did a fantastic job while I was gone. In fact, to the point where I wondered why even come back? Why not just be a listener to the show rather than a contributor?
I felt not quite the same. I thought we did a pretty good job of selecting the articles. and not as good a job abstracting them out.
It wasn't as funny during the statement of the people's names on the letters.
No.
It's pretty clear that I have that part of the show down.
That's your milieu, as it were.
But I was in, because people were asking, I was in Africa. I went to Kenya. Went to Kenya to visit some friends in Nairobi and some friends that run a little hospital. We went to the hospital. We saw some patients. It was very amazing.
At any point while you're in Kenya, did somebody say to you, "Can you go home?
Can you go home?" No, they didn't. But I do have, now, we've probably got some listeners in Nairobi, and I just want to state for the record, I didn't see a lot of Nairobi, but I can state this.
Yeah.
That place is freeway system, cars, pollution is absolutely horrible. It is like,
sorry, Kenya.
LA in the 70s, it's like London maybe in the 18th century. They burn really cheap fuel with no catalytic converters. There's a lot of cars, and there are people who are living on the side of the roads in huts that burn coal. It is kind of oppressive in terms of the amount of pollution in Nairobi. It is terrible.
Did you just compare the LA freeways of 1970 to the 1800s in London?
Yes. As far as I can see from the pictures, there was about the same amount of pollution in Shanghai today.
Wow.
So when I'm there and I'm driving through, I'm like, now, I understand why developing countries just burn the cheapest fuel they can because they, you know, they have to live sort of paycheck to paycheck, as it were.
Uh-huh.
But it's always the poorest countries and the poorest people that suffer the most from pollution because, you know, we can buy an electric car, we can have catalytic converters, but these people are getting cheap gas burning it and they are suffering the health consequences. I can tell you that bad. We need EVs and we need the price of EVs not go to $30,000. No, no. We need these EVs to get down to $10,000, $5,000. Right,
but don't you think it's an electrical infrastructure problem as well in those countries?
We need that as well. But the good thing about being in Nairobi is that out of Africa, there's some famous hills. I can't remember what they're called, but there's some scenes there where they're famous.
So you learned
hills.
A lot.
On these famous hills, in reality, there are now a big, huge amount of windmills.
Nice.
And in fact, in the Rift Valley in Kenya, there is lots of molten lava and stuff. And so in parts of Kenya, 100% of their energy is renewable because of hydroelectrics and stuff from
geothermal.
So that's exciting. I'm just saying. And then we went to Eldoret, which is where all the runners come that win all the Olympic marathons.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the hospital there. Kenyans are amazing people. Wonderful, wonderful time there. Then, last thing, I went on safari. Can't go to Kenya and not go on safari.
Yeah.
If you have that on your bucket list, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I can tell you right now, you have got to go to the Maasai Mara in Kenya and go on safari. It is a profound, life-changing experience. Sentinel Safaris is who I went with. They are amazing. Glam camping in these beautiful tents, and the elephants and the lions and the alligators, and everybody's eating each other and making more little lions. It's very exciting.
Everybody or everything?
Everything. It's okay. Really
so it wasn't
amazing.
The people weren't eating each other. We're not.
I don't know. I saw a lot of lions eating a lot of zebras. I'm just saying. You know, the zebras all sort of, they're out on the plains during the day, and then you see them all in the evening. Sun's going down, they're like, uh-oh, the zombies are coming. And they all leave, except some of them go like, no, I'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
And then you get up the next morning at 6 o'clock and you hop in your little truck and you start going out into the Mara and they're like, ooh, a couple of those guys didn't make it.
Natural selection, as it were.
And the lions eat so much that then they spend the next 4 days just going, as they're metabolizing the zebra meat.
It's like every hunt is Thanksgiving if you're a lion in
Kenya.
It's
kind of like Las Vegas when people go to the all-you-can-eat
smorgasbord.
Would you guys like to go to the zebra buffet this evening? Oh, that sounds delicious.
Oh, I can tell you much more about it, and I'll talk a little bit about London when we get to the Boring Company. But last night, late, huge tweeting. What happened?
Three-tweet storm. It was a three-tweet storm. We were waiting.
Can you say that?
A three-tweet storm. No, it was a three-tweet storm.
Okay.
I said it the way I wanted to say it the first time.
We're just trying to help. Just here to help.
You ridiculous lads. And Robert was, at the very same time I was putting on show notes, was putting on the exact same show notes, so of course I deleted his.
That's nice. That's the power of the Google Doc.
Indeed.
So we'd all been waiting and waiting and waiting because Elon had said, oh, Sunday, it's coming, and it's like getting pretty late. And I'm like, hey, Sunday's about to end there, buddy. And there it was. Model 3 passed all regulatory requirements for production 2 weeks ahead of schedule, expecting to complete SN1 on Friday. And then it was, what's serial number one? What's SN1? What's SN1? What's SN1? And I'm like, it's serial number one. That's the first car. It's happening.
I guess if it wasn't Twitter, he would have said 0000001.
We would have all thought he was trying to code in binary.
There is so much to unpack here. First of all, we, others, many, have criticized Tesla for not being able to do anything on time.
So he tweeted on time.
Yes.
And?
Not if you're on the East Coast.
In Nairobi, that may have been the wrong time. There's a piece of paper over there I'd like you to hand me, please. I don't know if you remember back quite a long time ago, we did a bet.
Uh-huh.
And there was a bet about when the first cars would come off, how many by the end of August, how many by the end of the year. Did we have a little bet about is there how many in July?
I feel
no.
like.
How many cars will be delivered by August 31st, 2017? Robert won by default.
I feel like that
but
lion
listen,
eating the zebra right let's, now.
Listen, let me just smart, read. Listen, smart guy.
Let me read.
This
come
is
on.
What
I know
it
you
says.
Wanted to call me something else.
Model 3 delivery pool, $2 buy-in. Mm-hmm. How many cars, $2 buy-in? What is wrong with
we're
us?
Huge. Seriously. Big spenders.
How many cars will be delivered by August 31st, 2017?
How many did you have?
I had zero.
What did I have, Tom?
You also had zero.
Yeah.
Which is weird. I don't know how we made a bet with zero. and Robert had five. So let's not get on our high horse over there, Robert.
He was was at least sentient enough to realize there would be more than zero, which
and
is
then,
a binary decision.
And then the more interesting thing, and I lost this one horribly, horribly, maybe even more horribly. By December 31st, 2017, Mel, you had 10,000.
Thank you.
We're going to miss. You're going to get demolished on that one.
Okay.
Robert, 15,000.
He's going to win again.
And I
he?
Had 50. I'm just going to give this to Robert right now in a suit.
Hey, wait a minute.
Wait a second.
But
the Fremont factory could blow up at any time.
Oh, yeah. Put that down. That's terrible, by the way.
If we don't want it to.
I think I'm going to take this and I'm going to go buy one of these coffees that you brought here.
you should give it a try.
I think we could give you the money, Robert, but you have to give it back if something horrible happens.
So that was the first tweet. And as that one came out, I said to myself, that's it? That's all we're getting? And I was like, I was a little bit disappointed. And then a few minutes later, tweet number two came.
19 minutes, exactly.
Oh, 19 minutes. But who's counting?
But who, me. Go.
You. Handover party for first 30 customer Model 3s on the 28th. I'm assuming that's of July. Let's just throw that out.
I'll assume that as well.
Okay.
Production grows exponentially, so August should be 100 cars, and September above 1,500.
That I would
not
say,
an actual number, but above 1,500.
So each month we're going up an order of magnitude.
If that's what an
that
order of magnitude
is called exponential growth.
And I will tell you this: as
almost.
Soon as tweet number one came, he instantly had about 400 replies. I mean, it was coming fast and furious. And then I wrote him a tweet asking him what sort of configurations, colors, all that other nothing. I'm no Robert.
No, he.
I wrote him too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you a Robert?
I said it would be nice if he would allow us at Talking Tesla to come
and see
to the event and report to Talking Tesla Nation.
Yeah.
And other people said, "Oh, good idea, good idea." And
crickets.
Then I realized I'm working like 8 shifts in 4 days right around the 28th. So I'd have to send Mel. And I don't know if that would happen.
I would go in a freaking heartbeat.
I would actually go to that because this is a pretty historic event.
I would
get off my buttocks.
In a heartbeat.
I'd buy my own shoddy. I'd go to the cash bar.
Yeah, and then there was a third tweet.
A third tweet?
What?
And then
a
he
tweet,
said,
three,
people,
a tweet,
wanted
tweet.
To, they, people kept wanting to know when theirs was coming. No shock there. And then he said, looks like we can reach 20,000 Model 3 cars per month in December.
Whoa.
So 100, so I don't know, 100 cars in August, 1,500 cars in September. He left October out, also November.
It's their transitional months.
And then he went straight to 20,000 a month. So I got an average of one car per day in July if they're going to deliver 30 on the 28th. Just an average.
That's math.
It's math. It's probably not accurate math. I got an average of three cars per day in August.
Also math.
Also math. Thank you very much. And then I got an average of 50 cars in September, and that bumps up to 645 cars a day by December, assuming they take some holiday time off for the Christmas and such. It might be actually over 700 per day. And in March of 2017, Elon said this. He was telling suppliers that he needs components for 1,000 cars a week in July. Not going to need those. 2,000 a week in August. Not going to get to that either. And 4,000 a week in September. So they're, I feel like they're a little behind, but I'm still pretty stoked.
Maybe this is what that warehouse east of the factory in, I forgot where it was, is there to just hold all this stuff for that building that sits by the Fremont 2 supercharger. It's a big building. They've got a lot of space to store parts.
I'm having a bit of an existential crisis.
You exist.
I do?
Yeah.
You sure?
Well, I exist.
How do you know?
Because I am here with you and I am existing.
We have been talking about the coming of the great Model 3 for a long time.
Yes.
And
if we were Mayan.
It's happening right now. I'd be very interested to see if they can ramp from one a day
Uno.
To Tom's math-derived 700-ish per day by the end of the year. That would be, I don't know, a 700... that's not even a 700% increase. 700,000% increase? No. 70,000? A lot of increases.
What is happening? This is what happens when Mel tries to do live math.
Live math.
Live math.
Yeah, it's a new show I'm working on. Live math. Live math with a guy who's not so good at math. Are we excited? Are we amazed?
This is very exciting.
I have a question, actually. One question about the math thing. Do you not use math to calculate dosages based on people's kilos and things like that?
Not anymore. No. Those skills are gone. Now we have a thing called a clinical pharmacist. And we say, hey, person who's actually good at math who doesn't want to kill people, how much drug should I give that person?
But that's not in the community.
No, but it's where I worked.
Yeah.
So you're doing math, Robert.
I still have to do some math. And you know what?
Yeah.
I feel sort of, I have math feelings for those people who've created these Model 3 delivery estimators online. They're going to have to go in and do some serious code tweaking.
I don't think so.
No?
Because, okay, I was told around October.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm about, that makes sense to be about 10,000 in.
Yeah.
I'm about 10,000
right.
on
you're
the 10, list.
You're 10,000 in and I'm 22,000 in and I was standing in line 2 hours or 3 hours before
turns
the
out
thing
some
opened
of these
up.
Calculators are estimates, not based on science. I had a friend last night who I was telling Robert we bought Leafs together when they first came out. We were both excited. Then he got depressed when I got my Tesla after I handed back the lease. But he stood in line at 2 a.m. first day. And he said, do you think I'll get my car this year? This is before this tweet came out. We were at a party last night. And I said, I think you are. I think you're probably in the first 10,000 if you stood in line and did that. You might get the car this year. And he's like, there's no way I'm seeing that car this year. Well, guess what? I think you're seeing the car
you might
soon.
Be. Yeah.
Maybe September, October?
I think, a few weeks back, I did a calculation of how many SpaceX, Tesla, and SolarCity employees there are. It's over 20,000.
Yeah, but they're not all.
They're not all going to get one.
Understood, but they also could probably reserve more than one car.
Given the tweets of last night, I believe the stock market is open today. It's July 3rd here in the United
that
States.
Is correct,
there is a
yes.
big holiday tomorrow called, I don't know, the 4th
Independence Day.
It's not Canada Day.
Let us ask Google if the stock price has done anything. Hey Google, what's Tesla's stock price today?
As of 11:27 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time today, the price for Tesla stock on NASDAQ is $362.80, up 0.33% from last Friday.
Not the jump that I would have expected based on the fact that they are starting production. I would have thought maybe $1,000 to $2,000 per share right now.
But it's built in. This news was built in, right? It was built into the price because people were like, oh, it's going to happen. Because Elon gave the pre-announcement to the announcement to the pre-announcement announcement, and then he made the announcement.
Well, that is this an announcement or is this a pre-announcement?
My guess is some people felt like it was somewhat underwhelming. Like they're going to make 30 cars in July and they're going to make 150 in August.
Yeah, but if you think back, when Elon first was discussing the planning and the delivery for Model 3, he said that he was going to set this like super limit, that we're going to get this thing out in July, but don't expect it.
Yes.
He was just giving this deadline to all the suppliers to get their act together and get the parts flowing, because he didn't feel like he could depend on any of or many of these suppliers because of the experience that he had with S and X.
He made a big deal of that. That's why I am so impressed, because he specifically said, we're setting a hard internal date, July 1st, but there is no way we're going to reach that date.
Right.
They did.
They did.
And this is goes against the S and the X and everybody else that says they can't get their crap together and do anything without a two-year delay. They did it.
And I'm but they said they were going to deliver on the 1st?
Yeah.
He said he was going to start production in July.
Okay.
That was his plan. And you know what? This kind of gives me a little bit of an internal chuckle, the sensation of, I know better, even though I should be very careful about those types of feelings, because somebody sent me on Twitter this article about Bob Lutz, who's now
GM.
A correspondent for CNN Money.
Former CEO of GM.
That's right.
Asked me to do that job, but I was like, I'm busy.
I got a Talking Tesla thing. I got a gig. It's big.
Yeah. So this was from Earl on Twitter. And basically, they're saying that this was an article from a year ago when Tesla was 196. And he says, Model 3 sedan will be a bust.
Mm-hmm.
That's in quotes. From CNBC contributor Bob Lutz. Mm. And he also thought that the company was highly overpriced at $196.77.
Mm-hmm.
And he expected the stock to go down, et cetera. Do you think he's a shorter?
So Bob, when he says bust, he means absolutely huge and they won't be able to build them fast enough. And when he says stock price goes down, he means go up by 2 to 3-fold in a year.
Well, settle down, because they haven't delivered one yet.
That's true. I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, but...
I mean, he could still be right. He probably isn't.
It could be a bust if they put all these Model 3s out and then they start exploding and the wheels fall off
right,
3 months in.
Busted.
So this is still very early days. They've reached some production goals. This is very exciting. But they've also made some changes to the Model S. So before you get to the Model X that I'm going to get over upset about.
They've made just changes.
They're tweaking all the time. So this is on electric!
Wow, look at that.
Wow, brought that back.
Fresh from Africa.
Whoa. So Tesla updates its models. And so just a little tweak here, a little software and hardware updates. The Model S 75, 75D, 100D are all going to go a little bit faster, as is the Model X. I won't do the numbers.
A little bit faster? That's a lot faster.
They're shaving sort of a second or so off the acceleration.
Okay, but think about what you're talking about. You're talking about, for the model, let's just talk about the model, the 75, Model S, 0 to 60 times.
Go.
Going down to 4.3 seconds from 5.5, that's about 20%, bro. That's not a little bit faster. When you're talking about full seconds...
So you're saying this is a lot faster?
I think it's a lot faster. Do you not agree? A 20% difference?
Yeah, I didn't want to gloss over the fact that this isn't impressive. This is much faster. All of these are much faster than they were before. And I asked the question, why be they doing that?
Boy, this makes 75.
Wait, hold on a second. Did nothing? Nothing about the why be they doing that?
That is English. That is good.
This makes the 75 so much more attractive if you have a few more dollars.
Unless you want smart air suspension.
Well, thank you. I was going to follow up on that. Now I can
not
go really fast.
Not everybody is all...
I said unless you want smart air suspension.
And I am the person that does, but... So this is about marketing. I think this is all about differentiating the Model 3 coming soon to a house near you. And the Model S and the X, further differentiating. Here's another reason to get it. And now they're doing this internal differentiation. You don't want to get a 75. You want to spend an extra $20,000 to get the air suspension and the Model 100D.
I drive a 60 on occasion. I have news for everybody.
Yes.
Plenty fast.
Oh,
0 to 60, 0 to 80, to 0 to I'm accidentally doing 95 on the 101.
Sure.
All of those are super fast. Like, no, there's no issue. It doesn't need to be faster. I appreciate that it is faster. It is unnecessary.
I wonder how much this is going to affect service. So we already know that with ludicrous mode cars, when they've gone through launch mode too many times, Tesla is actually starting to limit the acceleration, or they were, and they were saying this is because of early failure of parts and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
How much does this change the longevity of a 75? I don't know. I think I would expect that from Tesla, maybe it doesn't make a big difference. But that concerns me. I'm glad, though, for the people who can afford and will buy a 75. How many more will jump because of this? I'm curious to watch.
Yeah. Who buys a car based on 0 to 60 speeds?
Redheads.
A lot of people.
How many? What percentage?
Six. There's six guys. There's 10.
Probably.
I don't know.
Every car I've ever bought, I've never walked into the dealer like, excuse me, what's the 0 to 60 time on this vehicle?
How about the entire, well, I shouldn't say the entire, but everybody I met from Texas, they're like, well, we don't really care about the environmental part. We like fast cars. And we're buying a Tesla because it's a fast car. So I would say no less than 30% of people.
But don't they buy a lot of pickup trucks? And it's not me being stereotypical. Like, pickup trucks are not known for their 0 to 60 times.
Oh, they have great torque.
I mean, my car has a lot of torque for sure.
We don't know, but it is a selling point when you're a Tesla. When you get in a Tesla and you hit accelerate, and people who haven't been in a Tesla, they go, oh my God, I want one of those. First time I drove an electric car and that torque, it was great. Now, how much? I don't know. For me, I love my D. It goes really fast. It's much faster than my single drive. I don't really need it. It's fun to hit the accelerate every now and then. I'm not the person that's going to go and say, I need the performance. I need to do this in 2.3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a subset out there. But if you can just get it for free and go really quick, that's cool.
Yeah.
But Tom, you brought up a much, much more interesting deal, I believe, which is the X and the seats. Please, what happened?
So just randomly, you go to the website, and you can now fold the center row of seats. The seats that couldn't be folded, that didn't need to be folded, that were a work of art, according to one Elon Musk.
Yes.
You can now fold because it's just more useful.
Again, let's go back in time. Let me orient people if they don't know. So the X was this beautiful SUV. I don't know if you've heard of it. And when it first came out in the first renderings and the first pictures, Tom said, hang on a minute. That freaking middle row doesn't fold. And I said, Tom, you're an ignorant You can go back in time if you want. And I made it very clear how stupid he was.
Uh-huh.
Who would build such a car where the middle row doesn't
Who
fold?
Would? Why would they?
They had these wonderful pods, that sort of monopods that make the chair go up and down, and they can act independently. And I'm
they
like,
look
Tom.
Beautiful.
And of course they'll also fold. And he said, dude, look at the picture, you ignorant s***. Turns out they didn't fold. Turns out I bought one. Turns out that the single biggest problem, other than the effing wing doors, is the lack of ability for those middle row to fold. And in fact, it takes it from an SUV, which should have a huge amount of carrying capacity, in the version where it doesn't fold, kind of a, can I say it, poopy amount of carrying capacity.
Is it really poopy?
Poopy.
What is the cubic feet? Do you know?
I don't know exactly, and I should have looked it up, but it's got to be like in the 30 cubic feet sort of range, maybe 40 cubic feet.
But you can move those seats
way forward,
way
but they
forward.
Still get in the effing way when you want to put big things in. But let me tell you what's happened now.
All
with
right.
the folding, in the 7 configuration,
with the folding,
in the 5 configuration, I'm still a little confused. In the 6 configuration, when they have the little pod between those two middle seats. Did that fold as well?
The pod doesn't go away. The seats still fold.
Does it fold flat then?
No, the pod is in the way.
The pod stays in the way. Okay, so with the 7-seat configuration, you fold that thing down. You now have 88 cubic feet, which may not mean anything to you, but I can tell you that is a huge amount of carrying space.
That's
if you look at the Volvo CX90, which I think you used to have.
XC90.
That is supposed to have a lot of space.
It does.
The Tesla Model X 7-seat configuration, fold down the seats, has the most carrying capacity of any SUV here in Los Estados Unidos.
The XC90 is also a plug-in.
Compare that with the Model S.
Are you giving numbers?
I'm just giving a few numbers here. With the Model S, which has a huge amount of space. A
lot of space.
58 cubic feet, so the X kills that.
Is that the S with a dual motor or the old single motor?
I think it just is that back capacity, so it doesn't matter.
I see.
And then the Model 3 comes in at 14, which is which is good for a little car.
So this is like if you have a lot of stuff to move, the Model X would definitely be the way to go. And all the Model X's come with smart air suspension.
All of them. Yeah. It's a standard feature.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Now, it's interesting. Let me just talk about the wife for a second. So she's had the X for a year or so. She crashed it into the gate. Did we talk about that?
Well, I think I left. We
saw the pictures.
Okay. So,
sad face.
I'm sure she likes you bringing it up again.
The follow-up is, why did it crash? Why didn't it beep and stuff? And it turns out for some reason the beepy noises were turned off.
For some reason.
For some, I don't know why.
Somebody probably was like, oh, these beeping noises are annoying the crap out of me. Let me see if I can turn them off. Oh, turns out I can.
And you crash.
And you crash.
Is that like when you drive the car on the freeway and you say, okay, let's put it in lane and have it do lane assist and it doesn't stay in the lane.
I remember that.
Yeah, you remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if all our listeners remember that. But
so somebody knows how to use his car and somebody doesn't.
Yeah, you should basically, when you get the car, spend at least half an hour, maybe even an hour, in the car, yeah, learning all the things you can turn on and off, mm-hmm, because you may find yourself very disappointed.
Right. So you can buy the Model X in a 5-seat configuration.
Yes.
And the 3 seats fold flat.
Fold. Everything
and
big,
can,
huge.
Lots of cargo area. My guess is more, mm-hmm, cargo area than if in the 7-seat configuration because those seats are gone.
Yeah.
Maybe. I could be wrong. And then if you get the model, the 6-seat without the center console, those fold flat.
Okay.
And you get a lot of space, plus a little bit of space in between.
Right, the little hull.
It makes the middle row 2 seats.
Yes.
Right, and you like a little airplane. But you can't, then if you put that center console in, you couldn't access the third row seats back in there. And then you can get the sixth row with and without that, the middle row with and without that console. So a lot of room back there. And in all the configurations, the seats fold. What I want to know from your perspective,
yes,
is how angry are you, if you're angry at all, and you shouldn't be. And then if
don't
they
tell me what I should feel, Tom.
If they could retrofit your vehicle.
Oh,
see, if you could, okay, because your lease, you're about a year or so into your lease.
Yes.
It's a 3 or 2?
3.
3-year lease.
I think.
If you could right now call them and say, hey, I would love to whatever the upgrade, let's call it $3,500 to switch out that middle row of seating.
Mm-hmm.
Would you? And then.
Yes, a lot of questions.
Keep the vehicle. Yes. After the lease is up, you know, that opportunity that you have, because why get a new one? It has all the autopilot situation that you need.
All right, let me unpack this for you. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, talking to the wife, and we've been like, probably wouldn't get another X because of the folding seats and the Falcon Wing doors.
Yeah.
When I told her this configuration, the 7 seats and the huge amount of space, and she carries a lot of crap around, she's like, oh, I like this car. And now I'm done. I want that. I want the next one that has all the folding seats. So she has moved from, I'm not sure, to those folding seats, done deal. Yeah. Would I pay $3,500 for folding seats if I got a couple of years left? I would certainly consider it. But I would like to upgrade that X because I want more range and I want hardware 2.0. And we only have hardware 1.0. So yes, I'm
that
still going to let this
list go. Original autopilot?
Yep. Yeah. Original autopilot. It's very good. But I would let the lease go out and I'd say, take it back, Tesla, give it to somebody else. There's a slight ding in the back there. I'm not going to tell you. You're probably going to pick it up anyway. And I would get the folding seats, the 7-seat configuration with more range, still got the Falcon Wing doors. But that's for the wife. For me, she's like, well, would you want an SUV version? I'm like, yes, but I want the Y, no Falcon Wing doors. Thank you.
Well, I don't know about that. I think Falcon Wing doors might end up on the Y.
No.
Is there a wager? Do we need another package?
Yeah, we should do another wager. But I have a question for you, Mel.
More questions.
Go.
You've got to get it before the end of the year. Otherwise, you can't get Supercharger for Life. Is that important to you?
No, it's not, actually. Supercharging for Life is not that important to me because I'm not traveling all the time like you. I'm the person who will be driving this occasionally a long way to go do things. So, Tom, $3,500 for a 2-year lease.
Okay, I'll give you the money.
Well, I wouldn't do it then if I was you. So if you were planning on keeping this car in the long run, that's the only reason to do it.
To do it.
If they can, if they're retrofittable, and I don't know that they are.
I'm sure they're not.
I hope that they would be. That would be, because my guess is there's a lot of people out there like you who feel like that's the downside to that vehicle.
I mean, as long as the seats don't fold using some sort of an electronic signal, like that they would have to have additional wires, change in the wiring harness. If it's all manual, you just click a latch.
Why would that matter? The seats already have electrical because they go forward and back. I mean,
there may not be a way to put a signal to the seat to fold. So I'm just saying, you may be limited by the internal parts within the car. If it's a manually folding seat, I expect they probably could retrofit it. Will they? I don't know, because they probably have a hard time keeping up with their production. But
just saying, for me personally, Model Y, could we hurry up? I really want that SUV.
Will you stop? He's delivering the Model 3 on Friday, and you're already pining about a car that, A, never been announced.
Right.
B, we don't know what it's going to be like. C, he said there's making a semi first.
Look, Tom, I want to be very clear. I'm a human being, and human beings have this ability to, no matter what you do for them, as soon as you do it, I moved on and I want more.
And that's okay? Why the stock hasn't had a bump today, right there in and of itself. Like,
what else have you done for me?
I want the next Roadster, Roadster 4.
Really? You want a Roadster?
I do, man. It's so fun.
Hey,
it's a lot of fun to drive. But, you know, with all of this speed upgrade and everything, it might make you a little more, I should say, vulnerable to having an issue with your car.
As this is disturbing.
This poor Tesla driver discovered when he was showing off his ludicrous mode car and wanted to show just one more acceleration and stomped on the accelerator pedal. This comes from hybridcars.com. Luckily, no one was hurt, but this fellow with a performance, I think it's an 85, snapped his accelerator pedal arm. And there's a picture, we'll put it in the show notes, it's in the article, that shows this performance model accelerator arm that's just snapped right where the stop on the firewall exists to keep the pedal from going all the way. You know, basically it's the point at which the pedal hits its maximum.
The thing to keep the pedal from breaking?
Yeah, right.
or
everything else.
Snapped right on the
thing. You don't push it right through the floor of the car.
Yeah.
And so this thing snaps off. And of course, the car has, you know, pretty significant regeneration, which you can modify. You can adjust it. But still, the car is not going anywhere without an accelerator pedal.
That I've never seen a picture like that in a
Hold
car.
Hold on a second. So your insight is that the car won't go anywhere without an accelerator pedal.
That is
Wow, that is next level.
I don't think I can get a letter on that, but you can certainly pick on that one.
I don't know. There's probably a little stumpy bit left you can push on. There's a little stumpy bit.
You need a screwdriver down there.
I would have stuck like a wooden dowel up in there because it's hollow, right? And then you just put the two of them back together.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that this thing looks like a very thin-walled sort of plastic. And the article says, you know, hey, many cars have switched, have used metal or X, and now they're switching to plastic. And I wonder how big of a deal this is with other cars. I've not seen this myself, but the owner did report it to the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration.
Of course he did. I stomped on my car accelerator as hard as I possibly could.
Yeah, but you still shouldn't be able to break it. Like you could be Arnold, who pushes 1,000 pounds.
Have you ever actually driven a car?
Yeah.
So, like, when you drive a car, are you stomping it like it's an ant to try to kill the accelerator pedal, or
maybe
are you just slowly?
Well, the point is not the accelerator. The point is, have you ever driven a car? Have you ever been in a near accident? How much force do you put on your effing brake?
Yeah.
All of the force.
Yeah,
so
the
point
for
is,
sure, yeah.
If the brake snaps off like the accelerator, that's bad.
Well, that's a good point right there, Dr. Herbert.
Thank
Look
you.
At
did you.
You
like the way I
Very
did that?
Very nicely done.
Thank you.
That's
wow.
Like logic.
I've had some weeks off.
You're like a new man.
One thing I did realize when I was away is that sometimes we get into the weeds, and I think the show's better when we keep moving. So let me show you what we're going to do. Model 3 is spotted in New Zealand. This is from Teslarada. We love those guys.
Wow.
And so the first Model 3 in outside sort of the United States, I believe, was seen
at
the Auckland airport. And one wonders, why Auckland?
But they sent it there
we know
long
why.
After you were there. I think they're a little slow on the uptake if they wanted to get it there before you went.
So do you think like they're just following Mel around? So then we should see one in Kenya.
Kenya should be coming up
in a year.
And people were saying, I don't know if it was you guys, were saying, well, maybe they're doing this for, you know, cold weather testing. Now, there's plenty of cold weather places here in North America to do your testing. You don't need to go down to New Zealand. It's for hobbit testing. Safety of hobbits. That's
so
what
in other words,
about.
They want to make sure that the autopilot recognizes the hobbits.
Exactly.
Because it's having a problem with the kangaroos.
With the kangaroos.
So is there a different accelerator pedal if a hobbit is driving because their feet are so
it's
much larger?
It's huge. The accelerator pedal is huge.
Yeah, because they have big feet.
Yeah.
They're also really short, so they have to have a few phone books in the car. We don't have phone books anymore, you know, Tom?
We have them.
I get them, and they're really small.
Yeah, they're
small.
There's
no way you could sit on those.
And they go from the next to the mailbox, and if it's trash day, they go right into the blue can. It's a really a great use of paper.
I've actually asked our guy that drops off the phone book if they could just cut out the middleman and just throw it straight in the trash. Just go up the side of the house and throw it in the trash for them.
They should just print them all and then drive them to the dump.
It's shameful.
Because I can't imagine anybody using one anymore.
Isn't that how Elon got his start? They made like an online phone book.
That's right.
Yeah, that was
whatever
his first company.
Company was. Hey, Porsche has changed its mind on electric vehicles. This is also from electric.
That's because anybody who buys a Porsche, let's go back a second.
Oh,
anybody,
be careful.
Anybody who buys a Porsche does care about 0 to 60 times. Who do you think I am, Robert?
I don't know. Tom,
you know what,
you got
dude?
Me nervous.
Seriously, like what? I'm a very practical young man.
But they like to hear the car as well. They
well,
like
you can
to hear
fake
the
that.
Vroom, vroom.
You can put that in your little...
You can.
You can fake that. That's
but it's
easy.
Fake.
So here's the point. Porsche forever has been saying that, you know, EVs aren't going to do anything. And their CEO was saying, no, this is all silly. There is not enough muscle in an electric motor to be good enough for a Porsche. And now
who
they've realized...
Porsche?
Hello. Who does own Porsche?
Volkswagen.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And now they've said, oh, now we get it because of the Model S and X, that this is very fast. So their Mission E is coming out soon, 2019. It's going to have, you know, it's going to be pretty fast. It's not going to be Tesla fast. They're going like, oh, we're going to aim for a 3.5, 0 to 60. And just like you were saying, this is a group of people who want a super fast car. You buy a Porsche not because you can put a lot of groceries in it. You buy a Porsche for prestige and speed. So you better hurry up. Model E better have a 0 to 60 that's better than 3.5.
That is a Tesla fast. Tesla, the 100D, the new one is 100D 4.1.
Yeah,
0
but
to
you're
60.
Not going to compare that. You're going to compare against the performance ludicrous. Edition. By definition, the Porsche is a performance
How much
car.
Faster is the P then? Because
the
that's
P
not
is
on your list.
2.1 to 2.3. It's way faster.
It's 33% faster.
Now, the other thing they say, and we've been hearing this a lot and we will see, is that this Porsche, this one that's coming in 2019, is going to have potentially an 800-volt charging system, which will allow it to go from zero charge to 80% charge in 15 minutes. I'll see it when I believe it. I want to see the size of the cable that goes into that
and
car.
And they'll be part of that Volkswagen California supercharging situation, right? So it's synergistic, right? Volkswagen is like, oh, we have to spend $1 billion on electrical infrastructure. Let's make some cars
that can use it.
That can use it and sell them, right? Because they're sort of, you know, it's Porsche, so they're sort of a niche car maker. They make a couple hundred thousand units a year.
Isn't that amazing to you? That's true. I read that same number, like 200,000 to 250,000 Porsches a year. I thought they made millions.
So
they
Tesla's
not
gonna
much
be,
more than Tesla.
Tesla's going to be right up there with them by this year, right? They're going to be in the 130,000 range, and next year quite a bit more. But I think that those dollars are being argued about right now in the California either regulatory sphere, and I don't know that there's any money that's earmarked for a high voltage charging system. So it may or may not come to pass that they're going to take the benefit of the money they had to give up for all of the diesel emissions shenanigans.
I thought that was part of it, that some of it was going to be they could decide what they were going to put.
I think
and some of it could be high speed.
There's a second car that they're planning, right? The electric Macan. And they say between the two of them, they're going to put out 60,000 all-electric vehicles a year, which is pretty impressive for a company that was shunning electric cars. They only made the 918, which was a hybrid. And that was only like $1.2
million.
I got a couple of other things here that we can go through very quickly, because the other revelation I had is that there's so many stories we need to a little focus. So here's a hybrid ferry. And there's some interesting things about here. So you've got your truck, you've got your cars, you've got your semi, you've got your
bus.
I'm allowed to talk about it. Got your bus.
You can talk about it.
Got all these electric things. So the Finlanders have got this electric ferry.
Electra.
It's called Electra. It's a great name. It's got two 900 kilowatt engines, and they have these batteries, two 530 kilowatt hour batteries. So we're talking about 1,060 kilowatt hours
Nicely
in batteries.
Done.
Thank you.
Live math.
And so the question I had is, this is a great ferry. It's going to be good. We're going to make ferries great again. I
Stop.
Use that once.
Stop.
I got one more time before I do it. How far could you drive your Model 3 if you had a 1,060 kilowatt hour battery? Can somebody tell me that answer?
Zero miles. it would weigh like 84,000 pounds.
Mr. Carter.
Please tell me.
Yeah, so 1,060. Oh, I got my comma in the wrong place with a 90, like if you took my car, 90 kilowatt hours, your car, it would be almost 12 Model S's. And that would drive 3,500 miles. But the Model S does weigh quite a bit less
than a ferry.
But the ferry has a lot less like friction to deal with because it's in water. But this ferry is really impressive. It carries 90 cars. The ferry it's replacing carries like half as much. So they're going to be able to get rid of two other ferries and replace it with this one. And, you know, the Scandinavians really have it together when it comes to renewable energy and transportation.
What's the charging situation on this ferry? Does anybody know?
It must be pretty damn big.
Like, does it charge? Does the are the because it says it has diesel backups. Is that what charges it?
No, I think that the charging occurs as it's unloading and offloading cars at either port.
They said when it gets into port, it charges. But just you know, 1,000 kilowatt hour battery in your Model S.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
No, that'd be amazing. I'm driving to New York. How many times are you gonna have to plug in?
You know how
I'm going to drive back and not have to plug in.
So if you live in the town where the ferry docks, you know how you know the ferry is there? Your light's all dim.
Hey, so, I was in London. Sorry.
Go ahead. You were in London.
I was in London. And, you know, London is an amazing place. I just love that. It's just an incredibly fun place to go because it's so easy to get around using the tube. And that has implications for what Elon wants to do with digging holes. But they have these taxis everywhere, these iconic taxis. They all look the same. I didn't take one. I took Uber. Actually, I didn't even take Uber, I think, once. I took the tube the whole time. But there is some testing of London cabs, which are going to be fully electric. They're actually testing them in Arizona, where it's really hot. They're driving them a lot. And this was just sort of to say that the electrification of the London taxi is also going to occur. And I'm excited about that because London is such a wonderful city that used to have horrible pollution, and it's much better now, Tom.
Yeah, in fact, you can't drive like most cars in the city center. They're restricted because of both traffic and pollution and noise. These cars will serve that perfectly because they'll be quiet. It's a really nice looking taxi. It's the old style black taxi with like suicide doors, and it looks really comfy. And I think this is a really great move. Maybe they'll spread elsewhere. Maybe even they'll become autonomous. They didn't talk about that, but they're showing it off at the Goodwood Festival of Speed.
But if they're autonomous, when you get in the car, they won't be able to say, "Good day, governor."
That's true, in fact.
Where'd you like to go to?
In fact, London taxi drivers have to take a really rigorous examination. It's not just any Joe can't just decide, "Oh, I'm going to drive a taxi." You have to really know places, routes. And I remember having a fairly good discussion with a taxi driver in London, and he was damn serious about it and was very upset about the shared driving because he's like, "These people don't know where they're driving. They're making U-turns in the middle of the wrong place." And it's really like not very British, the Uber thing.
No.
And so I thought it was cool. I got some really good, it's almost like a tour from a number of taxi drivers.
Everybody deals with disruption in their own special way.
You know, it's interesting because it is a profession. They're very proud of their taxi driving skills and as a group, but boy, it really just shows that nobody cares. if I can take an Uber for half the price, I don't care how great
it's all about
you are.
Money.
And if I can get it on my app, and this is why cab companies, hello, if you're not listening, I won't tap it. You need to up your game to compete with Uber because people have said, you know, we want to be able to just get the cab on my app and I
that
want
exists.
It cheap.
There are taxi
I don't care
apps.
How professional or how efficient you are at getting me there. I just want to get there cheap. Hey, we're going to talk a lot about autonomous driving.
We are.
Cadillac has autonomous driving challenges. They're developing a system. Everybody's developing a system.
The Super Cruise.
So they believe that theirs is the best. They're using sort of Google Maps and front-facing cameras and military-grade GPS. But that's not that interesting to me because, you know, we're going to see. They're going to compete. Everybody's going to compete. What's interesting to me is from BBC News. Why BBC News and not Australian News, I don't know. But apparently Volvos are having some issues with their autonomous driving in Australia. Mm-hmm. Volvos have this system for large animal avoidance.
As they should.
Your moose.
Moose avoidance.
Your rhinoceros. Your elephant, for example.
those are all examples of
very large animals.
I think it was
you nailed all of those.
The problem in Australia is that we have large animals called kangaroos.
Very bouncy large animals.
That jump around a lot into the air, quite largely. And the Volvo system is having some difficulty working out if the kangaroo is flying through the air about to crash into your car.
Right. Which direction is the roo flying? Is it flying? Is it bouncing away from the vehicle? Is it bouncing towards the vehicle? These are a lot of very difficult mathematical calculations.
Evidently, if the roo is in the air, it appears much smaller. So as if it's like far away, and then it lands and whoa!
Right. And who knows? Is it a baby roo? Is it a full-size roo? Could be a wallaby. Who's to know?
It sounds like coding. This is a coding issue.
Yeah, I think it's a kangaroo issue is what it is.
Mel, you're from Australia, aren't you?
Wait a minute. Are you?
Yes.
That's weird.
Thank you.
So is it worse at night? Is it like deers in the mountains here in California? They get kind of mesmerized and transfixed with the headlights.
That's exactly how it is. It's even worse than that. So I bring this up just because it's a fun fact. In Australia, kangaroos are a huge collision problem. You're driving at night and they just run in front of the car. Like, don't run to the other way. They run in front of the car like deers and they jump. And the problem is, you know, they're big, they're muscular, and you hit them at high speed, it's a big problem. But as they jump, they'll often come through the windscreen and take out the driver and the passenger. So it's an absolutely huge deal. I didn't even know how big a deal it was. 16,000 roo strikes each year, costing millions of dollars, said this BBC article.
That's a lot of roo strikes, as it were.
I'm really worried about roo and Tigger too. Yeah. When the relatively quiet EVs become a major transportation element, what are we going to do then?
It's a problem.
It's 88% of the accidents involving animals.
Involving animals.
In the world or in Australia? In Australia. Are there any other large animals in Australia?
6% wombat. Oh, no. 6% wallabies. 3% wombats.
Wombats.
And dogs, 2%.
Rural Australia, where I grew up, is very much like rural Texas and rural America. There's a lot of roadkill.
Except for the whole, we don't have a whole bunch of bouncing animals running
around. No, it's a different type of roadkill, but if you go on YouTube, there's a lot of people that have really, you're a foodie, you're into roadkill food.
Yeah.
And you drive down the street and you find the roadkill and you cook it up.
Super fresh armadillo, just pull over to the side of the road and slice it up and... good to go.
Solar energy and renewables. Let's talk about the $7.5 million Kemper power plant, which has now suspended its coal gasification stuff.
I would like to let all the listeners know this is the part of the show where Mel is about to lose his mind.
Yeah, I'm going to lose.
In general.
As opposed to his...
about the environment. So be prepared.
Ready? Thanks, Tom, for that heads up. You should fast forward about 2 minutes right now. So this is from Ars Technica. And this is talking about this big gasification plant, which was the gas and oil industry is like, we're going to make clean coal and it's all going to be good. And I just want to say a few things here. First of all, clean coal does not exist. Clean coal is absolute bull. When you hear people say clean coal, that's called lying. And I say that knowing that people like George Bush, people like Barack Obama, people like others have said, clean coal, clean coal, like clean coal. Clean coal does not exist. So what this plant was supposed to do is as the CO2 is spewing out of the coal plant, that they would sequester this CO2 and somehow magically make it go away. The plan with this plant was to magically make it go away, take that CO2, push it down into a hole, and push up oil. And so clean coal, can I just say, is this thing on?
Oh, no, it happened
across again. The world, there are currently, in full production, zero clean coal plants in the world. Clean coal does not exist.
Wait, there's not one?
There is not one. There's lots of little test ones.
Okay.
But in full production out there, sucking all the CO2 off the dirty coal and magically making it disappear so it doesn't go into the environment, there are approximately, let me just check, zero clean coal plants.
And just to clarify for people, they weren't using the coal directly to fire this plant. They were using a chemical process to break down the coal into syngas, which they were then going to pump into and use as if it was like using natural gas to fire a plant, and take that, the emissions from that, and put those underground to increase the pressure to allow the oil to come up. And they have noticed time after time after time when they do things like this, the CO2 is not being sequestered. So they're taking a fossil fuel, adding a chemical to it, putting it in the ground to get another fossil fuel out of it, and letting the CO2 is leaking as well.
Are you saying that that clean coal plant, which now is sort of defunct because natural gas is cheaper, it wasn't at all clean?
No, what I'm saying
is this thing
No, it's not. It wasn't clean. But I was giving you an example of exactly what they are doing. They're not firing the coal directly.
Thank you.
And our federal government, if you're a person who wants to sort of increase the efficiency of our federal government, has financed this to the tune of billions.
It's a $7.5 billion power plant.
Yeah, but they got like some number. I know the government most recently gave $3.3 billion to subsidize, quote, clean coal technology. But that's subsidies that have been flowing for years. So the total, I don't know, but it's enormous.
Let me go on and just say this. Natural gas is much cleaner, but it still produces a lot of CO2. Photovoltaic panels, wind turbines, their overall lifetime dirtiness is infinite compared to these gas plants, to these coal plants. And remember that coal also produces sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, particulates, mercury. If you go to other countries where they burn a lot of coal and they have a lot of fossil fuels, you'll realize again, we have to move to renewables. For so many reasons, and it is the breathing hazard as much as anything else. Am I clear? There's no such thing as clean coal. Stop it, politicians, even left-wing politicians. Stop using that BS term.
I wonder if maybe the three of us are a little more sensitive to this because we drive in and out of the basin, which is known as the San Fernando Valley, and see the thick brown layer that develops many days every week, and realize that this is all emissions from vehicles. There aren't that many power plants here that burn anything other than natural gas, but it looks bad. It smells bad on days. It's hard to breathe on many days. It's just bad.
And there's a lot less of them than when I was a kid, but they're still
definitely. That's true, but still, I mean, all we need is more non-emission energy.
And from an economic standpoint, this plant was 5 years late and $4 billion over budget. So it was a $7.5 billion plant that was $4 billion over budget because comes up.
Yes.
And
like problems.
Let's do another study really quickly, which is just about, it's kind of a duh article. There's a study from Duke saying that if your solar panels get dirty, they don't work very well. In some parts of the world where there's a lot of burning coal, a lot of dust, you can really drop the efficiency of your solar panels. For example, in India, 50% reduction in the output of the solar panels.
That's a lot.
At my house in Los Angeles, a lot of particulates, a lot of dirt. My panels get really dirty. I get up there about once a month and clean them off, and I can have at least a 25% increase in efficiency. They say that doesn't mean get anal retentive and go up and use lots of resources and wash your panels every 5 minutes. But remember that washing your panels if you're in a place where it doesn't rain or there's snow is probably a good idea. The exact timing of that, I'm not sure. One of you found a spectacular video of solar panels in Saudi Arabia, where it's really dusty. Mm-hmm. How do they clean this?
They use like this air jet system, right? And they build it when they're building the big panel for the big utility scale arrays. They can put this thing, and then it'll just automatically go across them and blow bursts of air
and
across.
It
uses no water. It's called NomadDesertSolar.com. You can watch a video.
It's got a nice brush, kind of a soft brush, and it too is solar powered.
I saw that. So the solar brush blowy thing is solar powered.
Is it being powered independently or being powered by the array?
It has its own little solar panel at the top of this long brush like thing. And it's a great idea. There's another guy, a company that makes a water based solar panel washer, but obviously that's not a good idea in places like Saudi Arabia or Southern California.
And one of the comments on this Clean Technica article, somebody said something about, where's my solar Roomba? Because that would be perfect.
Right.
You get a little Roomba that just like, it's tiny, and once a week it goes about its business going over your solar panels. It sucks itself on there and uses no water.
Or maybe it just has legs and can walk around on your roof because some of us don't have our solar panels in one single spot or array. They're kind of spread about, and wonder if, you know, you could get something like that. Somebody, I bet, is
maybe
working on that
drone
right now.
Could fly from panel to panel.
And thinking about all of the sort of like stuff that lands on your solar roofs, this brings me to why I hate leaf blowers.
Thank you. Please rant against the man.
The man, the leaf blower man. You know, in Los Angeles, leaf blowers are not allowed.
Yeah, they're illegal and they're everywhere.
They are everywhere. Nobody enforces this. I live in a non-Los Angeles city, and note, you know, when I used to work a lot of night shifts, invariably, I would come home exhausted, up, like not a happy person, trying to get some sleep. I'd lay my head down on the pillow. I'd put in some earplugs just for good measure. And what would I hear? Through the earplugs, through the closed windows, the leaf blowers blowing and blowing and blowing. And it turns out if you ever watch somebody with a leaf blower, they blow not only leaves, but a lot of dust and a lot of junk and stuff, little bits that fall on the ground through the sky from the cars. And that stuff gets blown up into the sky again and creates more air pollution.
And typically what they do is, like, let's say you have a gardener. They blow your leaves onto your neighbor's yard. And then the next day when the neighbor's gardener comes, he blows them back over onto your yard.
It is a Monty Python sketch which is going on here in Los Angeles. I don't know if it's mostly LA. Is it other places? But it is ridiculous.
Yeah. So if you have a leaf blower, it's probably powered by a two-stroke engine. And to put this into perspective, a two-stroke engine is a very inefficient burner of fuel. It has to have oil added to it because it lacks a lubrication system. And a very, you know, reliable website, Edmunds, actually put a two-stroke leaf blower up against a Ford F-150 Raptor. That's a 6,000-pound
beast
of a truck. And they said, who puts out more hydrocarbons? It was the leaf blower. Like almost 300 times the hydrocarbon output of a pickup truck and 93 times the hydrocarbon output of a nice sedan. So if you're using a leaf blower, please replace it with an electric leaf blower.
And the other part about that is, right, if you use a leaf blower professionally,
yes,
you're using it for 5-6 hours a day.
Yeah.
Most people aren't driving their Raptor for 5 or 6 hours a day. They're driving it for an hour to work, letting it sit there all day, driving it for an hour back.
So the guy with the leaf blower is producing as much hydrocarbons as, I don't know, hundreds of cars.
Maybe
thousands.
Cities should help people who are gardening professionally reduce their hydrocarbons by having a program. You know, like leaf blowers for cash or whatever.
This article, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and this article sort of is the nail in the coffin for the guy that does my lawn and has his leaf blower. I've been thinking for a long time, I should just buy that guy an electric leaf blower.
And a long extension cord.
You can use it at my place. And actually, just chuck it in your truck and use it at other people's houses as well. And you know what you should also do with your electric leaf blower? Turn it into a vacuum cleaner. Stop blowing that crap around and suck it up.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But still, even in the sucking up of it, you should use the electric
leaf blower.
You
should absolutely use an electric version. Hey, let's do Supercharger update. And I challenge you to do this, Robert.
Yes.
Let us do it fast.
How fast?
Really super quick. Fast. And we really like to sort of talk about where these places are and how nice they are. And it turns into a travelogue, which is fine. But you have to now choose one place you're going to tell us about in terms of which is pretty and nice. And the rest you have to do very quickly.
Well, so we have a bunch of new.
Oh, my God.
Bunch of new. Can I say it again? Bunch of new. 7 new superchargers. There's only a couple of them in the U.S. Should I be like European-centric or U.S.-centric? What do you think?
I would say like there's 17 new ones in Europe and none near me.
Yeah. Well, there aren't any near us. But Arlington, Washington and Dowse, Iowa. Dowse is a tiny little town. It actually has more people in it back in 1900 than it does now, 511. And so it's between Des Moines and Minneapolis. They've opened up. It's a good travel spot. There's a bunch of other in Belgium, a couple in Norway, there's another one in Sweden and Austria. There's 7 that went into construction this week, including, get this.
Wait for it.
Burbank Town Center.
Hello, near us. So that's all that matters.
So that's different than the service center, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And 5 more went into permit status. How's that?
That's great. That's exactly how I think the real point is now they're putting in so many superchargers now that we knew this would happen to this segment, and I'm so happy. There's a lot of superchargers being put in. I'm very excited.
I have a question, though.
Go.
These Norwegian superchargers that are in small towns with like 800 people in them, and they're not really on major travel routes, I wonder if we could consider those like mini metro chargers.
I think that's what's happening. It turns out also, I think, Robert, you put this in here, which is there's a radio station here, KPCC, which has a little tiny story about, you know, electric cars are really popular in California, but infrastructure is a problem. 40% of people live in apartments. Let's listen to the audio.
The reasons why people don't buy electric cars have changed over time. Ethan Alkind is a researcher with the UCLA and Berkeley Law Schools.
Well, I think originally the barrier was the expense of the cars, and I think that barrier is largely getting solved.
Today, some new electric cars cost less than $30,000 after incentives. Now, Alkind says, figuring out where to charge is a bigger problem, especially for the 40% of Californians who live in multi-unit apartment buildings and may not have a parking spot. But Alkind says incentives can bring down the costs of installing chargers at work, and utilities could restructure their rates to make commercial electricity prices cheaper. There could also be public charging plazas where apartment dwellers could leave their cars parked overnight. Covering the environment, I'm Emily Guerin.
So that's why you need metro chargers. I didn't realize that 40% of people who live in the LA area live in apartment buildings. Did you know that?
Yes.
And it's the paradigm. You take your empty car to the filling station.
We talk about that all the time.
Whether or not you fill it with gasoline, diesel, or electricity, that's why I believe the supercharger stations are very important. And it turns out that Tesla is not only putting a sort of like they're helping destinations put in destination chargers. Turns out Tesla's actually also putting in standard Clipper Creek J1772 chargers at many of these sites. So Tesla's really trying to push this forward, but all the other freeloaders like General Motors and et cetera, are not putting money into, I mean, VW is, but not willingly.
They're
putting
relying
money,
on private companies.
Right. They're relying, well, yeah.
ChargePoint, you know, companies that are trying to make money building out this infrastructure.
They're just so far behind now.
Let me jump a little bit and then talk about something that I was interested in, and then looks like Robert has added, or one of you has added a lot of information, which is a couple of weeks ago you were talking, and one of the letters was about, you know, this infrastructure thing and electricity, and hey, look, there are power outlets everywhere. You've got infrastructure. What are you doing? Just plug in. Then I was thinking, you know, I saw a few weeks ago this adapter where you take two power outlets, because if you try and power your Tesla, for example, from a here in the United States, 110-volt plug, you only get about 3 miles of range per hour of charge. It's really pretty slow.
Yeah.
Might be okay for an overnight, and you can get 30, 40 miles. But this little adapter said you take two of these outlets, you plug them together, and you make this box, and then you plug that in, and now you get twice the amount of speed. And I thought this would be great.
That's the Quick 220 power supply.
Well, I'm not sure which one it was. I was just looking at the concept.
Okay.
So then I went on the Tesla forums, and a whole bunch of people said, wait a second, wait a second. These are potentially very dangerous, because if they're not done correctly, what you do is end up pulling a lot of amps from that sort of circuit, and this can heat up the wires, and there have actually been a number of sort of fires or near fires from people trying to do this. So I thought I was going to say, don't do this, these are bad, but you followed up with somebody who actually knows what they're talking about, saying, hang on, the story is a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, it's considerably more. This is Tony Williams from Quick Charge Power. Tony gave us our J1772 extension cords. And I thought to throw an email quick to him yesterday as I was reading through this to ask him what his opinion was. And he basically said no. This device, which basically takes 210-volt circuits, not outlets, but circuits.
Separate circuits.
Separate circuits. So not at the same plug.
Right. So if you turned off your circuit breaker to plug A, plug B would not be affected. So this is drawing power from two separate circuits. In those two separate circuits, you have a phased electricity. In other words, it's a sine wave. If you can get those two circuits such that the sine waves are in opposite direction, you can create 220 volts. And then you can charge your car with more electron push.
240.
So you 240, 220. It depends, you know, on the quality of the electricity you get.
Okay.
And you can charge your car then twice as fast or nearly twice as fast. But there are issues. You have to have thick enough cables. You have to choose the right outlets. You can't just put the two plugs from this device into the same outlet.
Which is what everybody would do because it's right there.
This is sort of like when I was a kid, I was fascinated with matches. And I wanted to play with matches and see what matches could light on fire. And so I needed to have someone teach me how to be safe with matches. That's why I became a Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
Now we need somebody to help us learn how to be safe with electricity when we start pulling some serious electrons out of the circuits. And so this can be used at RV parks. There's different versions. I suggest that if you're going to use a device like this, you do a little learning first.
Right. So I think that's a really good point. And thank you for doing that email. That really helps. So if you're like me and you're stupid and you don't know electricity and you thought, I'll just plug this into two outlets and magically I'll get twice the speed, that is potentially dangerous. You have to do it on two separate circuits. So there's some homework you have to do on this. It might be appropriate for some people who don't want to put in an expensive charger. But don't just go do this willy-nilly because it is potentially a little dangerous.
You'd be better served, to be honest, to get an electrician out if you have the space and you can do it, put a larger breaker into the single outlet that's closest to where you want to charge your car and turn that into its own 240. That would be the better move.
And you have to get plug adapters for that. I think for the Tesla nation, this is less of an issue because Tesla has built into the UMC, the charger brick, some sophisticated, you know, it can tell which plug you've put on the end of your charge cord, and it will limit the amount of electricity it draws to prevent these problems. But other electric vehicles, not so much. And so if you have a Volt, if you have a Leaf, and you're going to try and juice up the charging rate, I would be careful. I'm sure you could contact any one of these companies that sell accessories for improving your charging, but do some homework first, please.
SpaceX. Okay, so a couple of things happened. First of all, Rob, what happened at around 4 a.m. this morning?
The first Dragon that has been reused landed back home with some scientific material in it.
Space poop.
Thank you, Tom. That is a scientific term for poopy. They brought the poopy back from the space station, and it landed. And this is the first time that's been reused.
That's right. The first reused Dragon.
For half the money.
That's right. Now, the question is, how many reuse are they going to go until they stop painting them fresh for the next launch?
And now we had a launch which was planned for yesterday, Sunday. They stopped the launch for reasons that are still a little bit unclear.
T-minus 9 seconds.
That is to the wire. And they're going to redo it today, our time, Monday, July 3rd, and sometimes in the afternoon.
If they can, at 4:57 Pacific Daylight Time, they have a 58-minute launch window. And if they can get this thing up, that would be three launches in just over 10 days, which is really almost a record.
Now, explain to me this part. Cool. There is no legs, no titanium waffle fins. Is this going to get re-landed or is it just going away because this is the heavy, heavy, heavy load?
This is the heaviest spacecraft ever launched by a Falcon 9. They're going to use up every last molecule of fuel, both in stage one and stage two. The satellite itself has a lot of has a bunch of engines and fuel on it. It can adjust itself, and it's meant to stay up for like 15 years. But if SpaceX can get it higher up, and they're shooting for the highest geostationary orbit they can get, that will increase the length of the time that this satellite will be working. So they're under a great deal of pressure for this. But no, they are not going to retrieve the Falcon 9. It is going to burn up on the way down.
I wanted to talk very quickly about the fact that Elon last week was tweeting about the Hyperloop. The hole is dug. They're really moving this along to the next phase.
The
boring company, not the Hyperloop. And when I was in London, again, using the London Underground a lot, which really is a remarkable engineering feat, it shows that you can have a big city with tens of millions of people and you can get around without cars really easily by going underground instead of going overground. I'm going to talk more about it. I want to do a whole going zero on how they built the London Underground and how efficient it is. But it is pretty cool. If you've never been to London, you should go check out the London Underground. Obviously, there are other places around the world with great underground systems, but that's the one I know.
I wonder what it's going to be like if you're in your Model S or your X and you're going down the elevator on a sled to get on the boring tunnel. I wonder what it's going to be like for your ears. Because when I sit in the tube and I wait for the next train to come, my ears pop as the tube come or the train comes down the tube because it's pretty tight fit in there and the air pressure is pretty remarkable.
And they actually sent out some photos of the elevator, the car elevator.
Yeah, the sled elevator thing is like, this is actually moving along. This may be a 1% or 2% project for Elon, but it is actually moving along. The interns straight out of college are doing very well.
He's going to put one elevator near his office in SpaceX, a tunnel, and another elevator at a parking spot at LAX.
And call it done.
And walk away.
No, and then it's going to go to Culver City, and then it's going to go to Westwood.
Tom doesn't think that's happening.
I bet he doesn't even fly out of LAX.
You know,
no, why would he?
To talk about London again, So Heathrow, one of the busiest airports in the world, is one of the top three or four busiest airports in the world. So we get off at Heathrow and we walk down the stairs and guess what we hop on? The tube. And we go zing into central London, off at Paddington Station, and then we stay at the hotel right there.
It's like being in, Chicago.
Did you see the bear?
Did I do the same thing?
Yes, there's a train in the Chicago.
I live in Los Angeles, and you don't go from LAX to my house on the tube. You go in the traffic for hours.
Yeah, Washington doesn't work that way either. You have to take this really lame bus that sometimes doesn't even run, or it's full.
You could get from my house to LAX on a subway, but you would have to go about 30 miles out of your way.
It's a bit upsetting.
Because you would have to take the green line to the blue line to the red line, and then I'd have to get on a bus. Or I can take the flyaway, which is a single bus.
Now, Tom, you've been very against the app of the week. And I find that's upsetting to me.
I'm against it? Yeah, I'm not doing it.
That's what I mean by against it. And I don't have one this week, but I have been watching some media, and the media that I've been watching is called, I don't know, most people probably don't know about this, it's a little thing called Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh. Oh, I want to check that show
out. I'm in season one, there is a lot of violence and sex, so it's pretty fun.
Okay, cool.
But not for the kids.
Yeah, but now it's on season,
I watched a lot of really
like
cool media, but whatever.
What did you watch? Which was good, that's all. We just want to know. Mm-hmm. The world wants to know what Tom listens
Robert,
to.
Robert, what's your app and media pick of the day?
I watched an old movie the other night, Coming Home.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, with Jane Fonda and John Voight. It was a pretty remarkable movie.
Sad.
It's a very good movie.
It makes me think about what we've been doing in Afghanistan, and we won't get into it.
Hey, let's do some letters. Martin Minahan.
Minahan.
Woo-hoo. Thank you. Got it wrong. Model 3 in New Zealand. Actually, Martin, who is an anaesthetist or anesthesiologist, depending on where you're from, said, here's a Model 3 in New Zealand. We did that. Thank you very much.
I did that at work. One of the anesthesiologists came down because there was a case and they needed to be involved. And I said, thank you. I don't typically have an anesthetist here in the emergency room. And he looked at me really puzzled.
Like, where are you
an
from?
An anesthetist?
Hey, John Ford wants to give us a hard time and say, Robert, you did some unscientific anecdotes about global warming and he wanted to hold your feet to the fire. And I agree with John. Really do not enjoy people, both sides. It's a hot day. Oh, it's global warming. Oh, look, there's ice out, so it must be no global warming. So this idea that anecdotally, depending on what today's weather is, you decide if there is or isn't global warming is kind of silly. What we should really care about is data and trends and ocean temperatures and satellites and science, which says overwhelmingly that this is occurring. So thank you, John, for holding our feet to the fire.
A lovely letter from the New York Times in 1994 about the hottest days ever. So, hot then, hot now.
Getting hotter.
Getting
but
colder.
But not because it's hot today.
It could be getting hotter in some places. It could be getting colder in other places. That's why they call it climate change.
Keith Lang says this. U.S. coal-fired power plants churn out more than 100 billion tons of coal ash a year. And he links us to an article where there's this little community. And you burn up coal and there's all this ash and crap that's left over. What are you going to do with it? You're going to find some little community, hopefully where they won't notice that you're going to dump tons of this stuff with mercury and arsenic and bad enough. And, if the kids come out looking a little weird, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This little community said, I don't think so. And I just wanted to remind people that the burning of coal hurts you when you breathe in the particulates. The burning of coal hurts you when you increase the CO2 that goes into the environment and we can't sequester that anymore. And the burning of coal is really bad when you take the coal ash and you dump it. And for a long time, they were dumping it in streams, which would then go down and pollute lots of people and they would get sick. And unfortunately, I don't like to be political, but guess what the EPA did? Guess what a recent president did? They made it easier for us to go back in time to dump this crap into rivers and other places. This is not the way forward.
It's simple. Think about the environment like you're in kindergarten and your teachers taught you ABC. Anything but coal.
Ha, ha, ha.
Okay. Andy McClap.
I was just going to say it was Jessup, Georgia, just for people to know. Give them a little bit of...
good on them. They said, not in my back garden. Thank you very much. This is another reason, and Elon has said this before. Renewable energy, by definition, has to occur because this is a finite resource for a number of reasons. So let's just keep moving this forward. Please stop going back to the old way of doing things. Andy McLeod says, look, Robert, Tom, well, I wasn't there. I didn't get to screw this up.
Oopsie.
Apparently there's flat places in this place called the United States.
There are, yeah.
And you thought Texas and Oklahoma was a result of glaciation. And Andy says, I don't think so, and gives you some links to some geography things. Geology
bust
stuff.
Some knowledge in your head.
And so I guess it's not from glaciers, but from what, old inland lakes and seas and stuff?
Sure. All these other things make things flat. There's other ways for flattening out large swaths of land masses.
You didn't complete your at-home geology courses?
No. I mean, hopefully Andy and others, as they listen to this show, realize sometimes we make mistakes.
And Andy and others hold us to the fire, and we like that. Let us move on to Cody.
Wow, this one's not even actually very difficult. It's Cody actually, he's got Willnauer.
He put it down the bottom. Thanks, Cody. Willnauer. Yeah. But it was more fun trying
Cody
to do it myself.
Cody with a K, or is it Cody with a C? I don't know. It's hard to know.
And he's like, Tesla satellite internet, please. So I guess we've been talking about this recently. And then he talks
we
about...
were.
Where he is, that he has crappy and slow internet that's very expensive.
Horrid.
And, you know, we've talked a bit about this SpaceX putting up satellites and Google's doing it, and it's kind of boring. Like, yeah, everybody's talking about doing this and it's down the road. But let me just go over SpaceX's plan just very quickly for you, because I think it's, if they can do this, it's unbelievable.
Yes.
SpaceX plans over 4,400 satellites, little satellites. They pop them up there and they put them in an orbit that's much lower, which reduces the first biggest problem with satellite internet, which is latency. I had HughesNet, which is the sort of one of the first ones that came out in the United States. I had it 20 years ago. These satellites are way out there, and the ping to the satellite and back, even though light's very fast, results in really long delays. I click on the website, I smoke a cigarette, I eat a Vegemite sandwich, I go to the bathroom, I come back, and then it loads. These SpaceX satellites reduce that ping, that latency, to 25 milliseconds from what the current satellites are, around 600 milliseconds. Doesn't sound like a lot. It actually turns out to really be a lot.
It's a pain.
And the speed of these, the internet access for people, they say is going to be at 1 gigabyte per second per user. And they're going to have these pretty much all over the country. When they get 800 satellites, they can do most of the US and the world.
Yeah.
When they get 4,000, they can do the entire planet at about a gigabyte per second at low latency. That is huge.
So that means
partially
you can...
funded by Google and Fidelity Investments, one of the big investment firms here.
So that means you can watch Game of Thrones while you're out on your kayak in the middle of the Pacific.
Well, what it also That'd means that cool. you won't necessarily be reliant on your cellular data plans either.
No, you'll be reliant on the Tesla data plan.
That's I wonder fine. How much this will cost. This is a huge boon for developing countries and for rural areas. Mm-hmm. If they can pull this off, it's still mind-blowing to me that they could have this amount of data transfer
right.
for that many people at that speed.
Hmm.
So and we'll
is,
see.
I think this is one of the reasons why SpaceX had announced like a year ago that they were going to get into the satellite building network. So again, this vertical integration, not only will they launch stuff into space, but now because they're able to reuse their components, they can do it more inexpensively and they're going to start building satellites. This may be one of the main reasons that they're going that way. Of course, this enables the Tesla music service, which is so important to Tom.
Yeah, that was a great discussion. All you need is Taylor Swift, Tom. I don't know what the discussion's about. Ian McKinnon says, look, you talked about the Queen, and the Queen came out with all these green things that they're going to do. Uh-huh. And he's like, that's not how it works. What happens is that the Parliament and those guys get together and they decide what they're going to do. And the Queen says, and here's what our government is going to do. It's not actually the Queen. She's sitting back there rolling her own,
but she's,
smoking cigarettes. She's not doing any of this stuff.
But she read it. She's approving it. Like, she's still the sovereign.
You know what's amazing?
What?
The Queen is still the sovereign of Australia.
Yeah.
We are still not a republic. They've voted for it many times, but if the Queen wants to dissolve the Australian government, she can and did in the 1970s.
As Ooh. She should be able to. Why not? What yeah. are you people doing over there?
I mean, they're yelling. Everybody,
there's kangaroos running rampant.
Rampant, you probably destroying have Volvos.
You probably have an MP that's a kangaroo. You don't even know it.
Yeah, well, they're talking about witches and all it's kinds true. Of nastiness.
You got the beautiful Great Barrier Reef.
Not for long.
Yeah. You'll have it.
For a little while, I mean, it'll be a couple there. Of weeks.
Maybe they can spray paint it and recolor it.
Oh, terrible, really?
Terrible. Yeah, well, wow. If it's bleached. I think this is great. The Queen is an example, a person that many, many, many people look up to. And if she is green, that gives many more people the urge to be green, and I'm all for it.
She could have just looked at what the Parliament gave her and said, I'm not reading this at all. It's not happening. But she didn't. She read it. She was cool with it.
All right, so she's green in as much as that she'll read statements that are green.
She decided to only light 8 of the 32 fireplaces in Buckingham Palace at any given time.
Hey, are there solar panels at Buckingham Palace?
They I actually walked past Buckingham Palace. So it is an incredibly old and inefficient building. They're trying to retrofit to the tune of large sums of cash and put solar panels and stuff up there. So they're trying, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm back.
You're back. We missed you.
I really had a good time. I thought the boys did such a fantastic job. And my role now is to sort of tweak Talking Tesla because I had some time off. And I thought, oh, there's some great things. There's some things we can do better. And one of them is, let's keep it moving along. And I tried to move along, and now you're all going to be mad at me. I'm like, why does Mel keep moving along? Why isn't the show 4 hours long?
Why isn't the show 4 hours long?
Because that's too long.
Oh, that's too long.
The Patreon people, I got to say, sorry I took this week off because I was so jet-lagged I couldn't do it. But I'm going to double down. I'm going to make the Patreon stuff even better.
Two.
Going Zero is going to be better. It's all going to be better. Everything's going to be okay.
It's all going to be better, and the Model 3 is getting so close.
Yeah, it's only a couple shows away.
What color are you getting yours in, Tom?
Blanco. Or whatever color.
I was going to say, what if they only had some leftover blues or reds? Or
I hope that. I really hope that's not the case.
Yeah.
But okay, whatever, blue, hey, red.
Can we go back? This, you know, they're doing this. Is there an event yet? Has he said an event yet?
This show's not
just
over
the
28th.
Just the 28th.
That's when they give it to the first 100 people?
30.
First you should really pay attention to the beginning
of
the show.
I know, but was that like an event or is that like closed doors? Are
it's not been
media going to be there?
He doesn't know.
I asked for an invite. We said.
So it'll be probably they'll be delivering, if there is a signature edition, right? They'll be delivering those signature editions.
Nah, it'll just be the plain Jane edition.
So do you think it's just going to be like the first guy in line at the first 30 store? So did you talk to the guy who was first in line at your store?
No.
Aren't these going to the employees?
These are
going
to go to employees. So I'm pretty darn sure that this is going to be like the Model S delivery, where they rolled one car up in front of a whole bunch of enthusiastic employees. And some guy who was like an investor in Tesla bought the first S. Or the second S. I think Elon has the first. And so this one, they're going to have a group of employees. They're going to roll up the first S, and he's going to go, Joe Smith! And Joe Smith is going to jump like, you know, it's The Price is Right, out of the audience and get into his car. And then a Nina Jones! And so they're going to bring these people up. It's going to be a kumbaya moment. We're all going to continue to salivate and probably only watch it on a webcam.
You don't think that Elon's getting SN1?
No.
J.B. Strobel?
He said he's not driving it. He's driving the S.
Yeah. No. I think it's going to like engineer types and Solar City installers, and it's going to the people. This is the people's car.
And speaking of Solar City, waiting for them to call me back to get solar installed.
Yeah,
here at the
delayed.
Studio.
Not going to happen
delayed,
this month.
July 4th weekend. Not going to happen. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Talking Tesla 93 is in the can. Talk to you next week.
Adios.
Hey, I said adios.
Oh, jinx.
Boom. Best show ever.
Talking Tesla is a production of Fully Boo Incorporated, hosted by Mel Herbert, Tom Wolfson, and Robert Rosenberg, edited by Eliza Jane Barnes, and produced by CC Herbert and Mel Herbert. To support Talking Tesla, go to patreon.com/talkingtesla. To find our referral codes, go to talkingtesla.net/about. And finally, if you love the show, go write us a review on iTunes.